And welcome back to Foul Players Radio, and this is Michael Spedden. We received the sad news that one of our beloved foul players of Perryville murder mystery family, Greg Crow, passed away unexpectedly this weekend. I first met Greg in 2016, performing on the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad with Otter Productions, before we became the Foul Players of Perryville. Greg stayed with us and was always a pleasure to perform with. He always brought his unique sense of humor to all the roles he played with us and played all kinds of characters and was just very, very funny. It was always a pleasure to talk to him, and we would talk about going to New York and Philadelphia for auditions, and we were proud of him when he booked his big jobs like Gotham, Eighth Grade, and The Politician. We even ran into each other in New York once while I was up there for an audition, and he was having a wardrobe fitting for, I think, The Politician shoot. We stopped and spent some time together and had lunch at one of the awesome eateries in New York City before we parted ways to head back home. When I booked Gotham a season after he did, he gave me great advice about what to expect from the people and what the set was like before I got there. And as I had mentioned, he always gave a wonderful performance during the murder mystery shows we did on the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad, and did a wonderful job last winter as one of our Santa Clauses during Polar Express. Greg, the Foul Players of Perryville family will miss you, my friend. What we wouldn't do just to have one more time to see one of your hilarious characters during a murder mystery show, or to see the joy that you brought all those children when the train rode by and they saw you waving to them as Santa standing outside of the North Pole. You were a wonderful performer, a nice friend, and a wonderful example to all of our young cast members in Polar Express. Greg, thank you. You will be missed. Your friends, the Foul Players of Perryville. And now, our interview from last year with Greg Crow. And welcome back to another episode of Foul Players Radio. My name is Michael Spedden, and we're here tonight with Mr. Greg Crow. Greg is one of my actors in the Foul Players of Perryville, but he's also got a hell of a long list of TV and movie credits here on his IMDb page. I mean, he's like, it's like reading War and Peace here almost, Greg. I don't know what happened, but you got a lot of things on there. Greg, how are you, buddy? Good to see you.
I'm doing good. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing very well. I'm staying quarantined.
That's good. Yes, I'm sealed off.
As we had mentioned, our civic duty to not spread germs and to not carry germs, to stay home.
This is the best, the best sacrifice I can make. Sit on my butt.
Exactly.
I couldn't ask for an easier sacrifice.
Yes, really. And for this sacrifice, you don't have to do 10 weeks of push-ups.
That's true.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Jesus. I know, thinking about that. Definitely a young man's thing there,
That's true. Yep.
So, Greg, you've been with doing murder mysteries with me back when you started right after I did with Otter. I joined Otter in 2016. And you came in New Year's Eve, so you kind of started in 2017 with Otter.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we'd worked together a couple of years until they became Foul Players. And yep. One of the very first shows as Foul Players you were with out in Cumberland, and the very second show, I'd have to say I haven't seen a bigger bomb in my life. Do you remember what happened? It snowed. We were supposed to do Sunday brunch show, right?
Yeah. First off, it was the first ever Sunday brunch show. That the railroad tried, and the last one, which is they didn't give anyone enough time to get up there in fair weather. They started the show way too early, and then it also snowed a lot. So what was it, eight of them? Eight people showed up. Four couples, mm-hmm. and so we did a show for eight people.
And the thing was that apparently it was much more exciting to look out the window and look at the snow than look at us.
Yes, it was eight of the most bored, lackadaisical people ever.
It's funny how because we're on that train a lot and we hit. Yes. We go over huge and we get the whole place rocking laughing, you know, getting into it and everything. And this one here, I mean, I think we could have lit ourselves on fire and ran up and down the aisles, and none of them would have even turned their head to look at us.
Yeah, I don't know what they would have done, but yeah, it probably wouldn't have been. Yeah, they would. They certainly wouldn't have been alarmed.
Exactly, and I think the show was over in like 36 minutes or something, because
we did it so fast, because you know we didn't have to wait for laugh lines or applause or anything. We just kept going.
Yeah, we weren't dodging waiters or anything like that. I mean, yeah, we were able to work around that. And the whole kicker of that whole thing was that when the show was over and we did the solution, and you know we usually have the audience vote on who they thought was the killer. Okay. And I picked one winner. One person got it right out of the eight that were watching.
Fortunately, we had a winner.
And I asked her, I said, "So what made you pick this person?" She goes, "I don't know. I guessed."
And if she hadn't at random circled in the correct number, we wouldn't have gotten out a prize.
That
crowd, I don't know.
Right. I mean, they pictured, I think she just circled something to hand it to us to get rid of us, you know?
Here, take it.
Exactly. And that's how it is on the train. But overall, I mean, that's a really good gig. I mean, and we're going to be back there soon, you know?
It is so much fun. It's because usually you get a good crowd, and they're laughing, and they sometimes they talk to you, and they interact, which we welcome in that type of performance. If we were on a stage somewhere, I guess we would be mad if they kept doing that. But, you know, because we're in among them, you know, it's great. It's great we get to... They get to talk to us, and we work that into our act, and it's all improv and ad lib mostly.
Yeah.
Except the plot and stuff is written out, but there and there's information we got to get out there. But other than that, we can say whatever we want.
We do,
and that's the fun part.
It is the fun part, and the thing is, when we do these and we rotate people, or sometimes somebody can't make it, so we bring in a substitution. You know, the shows, you know, the basic, you know, the story ends up getting told, but people bring their personalities into it. They bring in different interpretations of the characters, and they make different choices and everything. And it ends up being a lot of fun as a performer, I think.
Yes, it is. There have been shows in the past. I don't know if it's been with Foul Players, but back with Otter, I know at least a couple of times, a couple of different shows, we do them for like 4 to 6 weeks or 4 to 6 shows. And I know I had 3 different roles in the run of a show here and there.
Right.
And I'm like, it's great because you get to, you know, you get to look at it from the other side and just have fun with it.
It really is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun here. So, looking over your IMDb page, it turns out that, you know, Greg is also another Gotham alumni, another Gotham character alumni here, Gotham character actor alumni. And we both die.
Yeah, you know you're a Gotham character actor alumni if your character died.
Exactly. Without any monologue, too, or without any dialogue.
That's true.
Yeah.
All I had was pickle chewing noises.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't even get that.
Well, I got it. I got an ugh when I got shot.
Oh, yeah, you got an ugh.
Yeah, you got a...
It's true.
You're true. And who knew nowadays? I mean, just imagine if that was real. I mean, nowadays so many people get offended by people getting eating meat. And you were eating a pickle, and oh boy, I tell you, you paid dearly for that, didn't you?
Well, yeah, it was poison ivy. Of course she's going to get mad at someone eating a pickle.
Right.
Especially me, the way I was eating it.
Yeah, I think
the director that day who just came to me and said, "You love pickles, right?" And I said, "Today I do." I must have been into, I lost count of how many pickles I actually bit into.
Oh, I bet.
Took bites of.
I bet. And you had to spit them out too, didn't you? After a while, I stopped.
I stopped. You know, I just ate them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, "Oh God, if I do this anymore, there's going to be a problem. So I'm going to have to spit them out." And I told it. And I told the second AD. that I needed to do that. That's assistant director for people not in the biz.
Right, right, right.
And that I had to do this. So they got a production assistant, and one of her jobs was, while that scene was being filmed, was come up to me and hand me a cardboard like French fry basket, mm-hmm. Kind of thing, and I just spit the pickle I'd been chewing out, and then she would take it away. She was very cheerful about that. I mean, she, you know, yeah, it's awesome. A lot of the crew are just, you know, a lot more cheerful than I would have ever expected, mm-hmm. someone who works under such high stress to do. But they're pros, and they're really awesome. And I you know, all I do, you know, we just come in, do our little dance or do our little monkey dance, and then mm-hmm. and then go. They have the hardest jobs in the world.
They do. And
on the set, at any rate.
Right. And I just can't imagine, you know how you hear over the years about stories about actors who were difficult or they were jerks. I could never imagine doing that to one of those people.
I just can't. You know? Yeah. I can't even think about that. You know, I just, you know, you and I are kind of nice people, I mm-hmm. guess. You know, I don't know. I suppose if I had everything handed to me on mm-hmm. a silver, after a while, you never know how mm-hmm. you're gonna, you know, you might change,
mm-hmm. right,
for the worse because of all that. You never know. Stuff changes people, and you know, there is really no excuse for that on set.
Right, right.
And, that's what I do. I try to be treated the way I want to be treated.
Mm-hmm. Now, where did you film that particular? Did you do that at Steiner, or did you do that at a different location?
No, they had an on location.
Oh, it
at
was.
A bar. They found a bar. Just a couple of blocks north of Union Square
in
Manhattan, and it was pretty cool. I mean, it was a morning shoot, so you know the bar was obviously not open for business yet.
Right, right.
I'm guessing it was open later that evening, but who knows? Mm-hmm. We just kind of took over the bar, so that was everything you see in that scene. That was a real. That was all real bar stuff.
Right, right, right. And and again, that's what it was like. So that was actually one that was on location. I mean, you know, I got to see a lot of the things, some of the other sets and things like that, things that you would think were.
Oh, you got to be in the studio.
Yeah.
What were you surprised by?
Well, I was just surprised by how they did a lot of the things. I mean, you walk into one room, and I was in the Sirens nightclub, and that was where we were resting in between shots.
Mm-hmm.
And then you walk into another room, and it's like the city hall, and then you go into another room, and you just look in, and then also, a lot of times, you know, you think you're looking out the window at the city, but you're looking out the window at a backdrop, which I thought was really neat, you know. I was like, so that's how they do that. And I was just kind of looking around at a number of other things, how they did lighting, how they can simulate light at just about any time of the day, because they had, you know, they can shine lights into the window at different angles to make it look like it's morning or afternoon.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was really fascinated on that one and, you know, some other shows that I've been involved with, which I can't mention yet. It's just some of the techniques and some of the things that they do that are like, a lot of them are just like, wow, that's just a no brainer to do it like that. But you would never think about that, especially if you're somebody who overthinks. Looking at the way they do lighting and looking at the different things they do.
It's kind of amazing. Even when you're on location, if the location has a window,
mm-hmm.
you'd think that they're fine with that, but no, they have to have lights outside to be the sun.
Right. Yeah, they do. yeah.
And, you know, because they need it consistent throughout the shoot, you mm-hmm. know, so they have to have lights, you know, light, you know, lights streaming in the windows if that's what they want, you know, for a sunny day, and you know, you, but you're inside.
Or,
so black, yeah, they just they just have to, you know, it's amazing what they have to think of.
Right, or black canvases over all the windows if it's night.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And it's just amazing the things that they think of and the things they come up with. And even with things like props and weapons and all the things that are part of a scene.
Yes.
You know, it's really amazing. And the things that you don't see or just that you know are going on. I mean, I could probably talk about the scenes that I've done, you know, for hours and hours and hours and stuff like that. You know, just kind of how they did that. But some of the other things, you've had some really good credits lately here. Another thing that you were talking about was New Amsterdam. You had a part on that, I think, last year, 2018. Yeah,
that was a lot of fun. That was in a set. They actually have three studios that they used parts of,
uh-huh.
as well as some location stuff that they do.
Mm-hmm.
I was up in, it was up in Yonkers. It was one of the studio up in Yonkers, and it used to be like an old kind of like medical building, uh-huh. but the part that I was in was supposed to be the newer part of the hospital in the ICU.
Okay.
And they actually built that out in the studio, you know, they actually had that, you know, built, you know, in the big studio room that mm-hmm. they were using, you know, and it had one of those huge panoramas of the skyline.
Mm-hmm.
So when you looked out a window, it looked like you were actually, you know, in a building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of interesting when you build something, a set like for that's supposed to be like, well, a hospital, you have to, you know, they do a lot of ambient lights, you know, mm-hmm. stuff that, you know, because lights are going to be on
right,
in the
thing.
So they have to have lights that you can see on the camera, mm-hmm. or at least that you know what's going on. But they also have other lights that are above, you know, above the ceiling,
mm-hmm.
Which doesn't exist most of the time.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
to do whatever you want. But what amazed me of New Amsterdam was the set decoration for that. I mean, they made it look like an actual hospital, even down to the point of the monitor, the information monitors. Mm-hmm. I was sitting in what was the ICU waiting room for a second while they were changing up for the next shot, and they had a monitor in there that actually had information that was flipping screen to screen that had information about New Amsterdam Hospital,
mm-hmm.
and general medical, you know, things about, you know, it was like somebody had to make all of that. And it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just astounded whenever I walk into one of these sets that, you know, all the work that had to go in just to make it exactly, you know, exactly right.
It really is amazing the extent of detail that these props people and set designers have.
Uh-huh.
And you know, like another thing is that if, especially, we did a number of years ago, I did an Agatha Christie piece. It was a murder play, uh-huh. Agatha Christie, and it was done in the round. It was a Theater in the Round show.
Oh, boy.
And the thing with that was that it took place in 1950s England, and
uh-huh.
there was a guy who did all the furnishings. He knew what was a 1950s ashtray for this class of people. He knew
wow.
what the lamps would have looked like. He knew what the tables would have looked like. I mean, he made this thing. I mean, when I was on that set and I was, you know, doing my parts and everything, I was looking around and I felt like I was on the set of a Masterpiece Theater show, like on PBS.
Yeah.
Just the level of detail and to have the knowledge of that too. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I know things that look old and things that look, but I don't know, you know, if it was like, if it would have been out of style by 1952.
I couldn't tell you a 1950s typewriter from a 1930s typewriter.
Right, right.
But, you know, there are people that know this, and if you're putting on a show set in one of those eras, you need to have somebody that knows that.
Exactly, exactly. Because, you know, all you need is one critic who knows that, and if you're not on the money, they're going to tear you up, too.
Exactly.
But it's just, I mean, I've always been fascinated. I just like to watch them work sometimes. And sometimes, you know, you don't want to interrupt people because, you know, they got a lot of work to do. But, you know, sometimes I just have so many questions.
Yeah.
You know, I just have so many questions.
I keep it to myself most of the time because, yeah, they're on a tight schedule.
They really are. They really are. not that most of them aren't very pleasant, but, you know, and they will talk to you, but you don't want to wear that welcome out real quick. You know,
that's true.
You don't want your management getting that phone call. Like, who's this pain in the ass that works for you? Don't ever send them back again, you know?
He's asking them questions and holding them up. And
Yep, get that guy a phone to stare at or something, you know? Okay. So I was also looking through your lengthy IMDb page here, and I see that you had a movie called Eighth Grade that was out not long ago, too. And tell us about that part, about that movie.
That Bo Burnham, who was a stand-up, who's a stand-up comedian who really made one of the stand-up comedians that made YouTube actually work for his career. And he had music videos and he had, you know, stand-up routines and stuff, and he just kind of blew up. So he wrote a script about a girl that was just getting to the end of her eighth grade year. And it's kind of like a sort of a coming of age kind of snapshot in the day in the life of, or it's actually a couple of weeks in the life of, but he wrote this really phenomenal script, and he was, you know, fortunately somebody found it, the right people saw it and wanted to make it into a film. So, he got a budget and so he was directing it. And then, I get involved, when I first got called in to audition. I didn't really know who Bo Burnham was, but when I got the call back, I certainly did, because I looked him up and he was, I knew we'd get along because he's just so ridiculous. His sense of humor is so out there, you know, and that's where I am most of the time, as you know. So we just, you know, we just ended up having the callback audition where we're just giggling, the two of us, and the casting director, whose job it was to find me and show me to him, and then bring us in together, so that, you know, we decide. Yeah, she was having a ball, because, you know, she knew she hit a home run. But we just really hit it off, and so I ended up doing the principal of the middle school.
Oh, okay.
Where Kayla, the main character, goes. Kayla's played by Elsie Fisher, and she is ridiculously awesome. When I read the script, I was like, boy, this kid, whoever it is, whoever he got for this, you know, for the main character, has really got to, you know, because the whole film is riding on her.
Right.
I saw her work for 2 minutes, and I realized I didn't have to worry at all.
Oh, good, good.
She was fantastic. And I just had a lot of fun. He had me do my goofy self as a middle school principal. He's when we get to a certain point, he's like, "Why don't you give me one of these?" And he shows me a dab. I'm like, Oh, I know what a dab is.
Yeah.
But anyway, I barely knew what a dab was, obviously, because I'm old.
Right.
But anyway, so I ended up doing the dab, and you know, he loves it, and that ended up being, well, from my iconic moment in the film.
Okay.
Many, many iconic moments that didn't involve me at all, but and it ended up, you know, it ended up going to Sundance and a bunch of other festivals. It got all sorts of festival attention.
Uh-huh.
She got nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Actress, Spirit Awards, so they got a lot of awards attention and stuff. And it was in theaters for a couple of months, between August and about October,
right,
of 2018. So it really hit a home run. And I was proud to have been a part of it.
Right. I saw you did. You have a credit here for The Veep as well. Played the weird guy.
Actually, the full name of that role is Weird Guy in a Boat.
Okay.
I guess they abbreviated it to Weird Guy.
Yeah, Weird Guy for sure, huh?
it was third season of Veep, and that got filmed, as you know, in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
So it was awesome. A lot of Baltimore area actors got involved in that show. We were supposed to be, she was supposed to be, Julia Louis-Dreyfus was supposed to be, in with the Coast Guard for a night patrol, as a, kind of more of a PR stunt than anything else. Cause the character that she plays is kind of just really doesn't really like anybody or care about anybody, except she just cares about her political career.
Sure, right.
But in a funny way. And it was a wonderful show. So they're in this Coast Guard boat, and we're out in Middle River. There is an actual Coast Guard base. Yeah. In Middle River. It's actually a joint base. I think a couple of different regional and state authorities use it as the Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just out. We're like, I don't know, 20 to 50 feet away from the shore. It's not like, but we're supposed to be out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Out in the bay somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in this little rowboat, and I have swords and lava lamps that I'm apparently smuggling. And it's ridiculous. Yeah, everything on Veep was just a little real, but a little ridiculous. And mm-hmm. So this was the ridiculous part. So, I'm sitting there with my hands up the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was a mistake.
Right.
Every take I had to have my hands up the exact same way. It was not good. So I had my little exchange where everyone else in the cast was on the Coast Guard boat,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in a little rowboat, and we're like 20 feet apart.
Right.
And I have to yell my line over to them. And it was a lot of fun. It was, I definitely had a lot of fun. Everyone in the cast was really awesome, and mm-hmm. and the crew was, as usual, really, really came together. And that was a one where the lighting was kind of simple. They just had this huge spotlight that was kind of like had a filter on it, because mm-hmm. it was supposed to be just like moonlight, so
right,
they didn't
right.
really have much other lighting to do out in the middle of the water. But it was a lot of fun.
Oh, great. Yeah, a lot of people I know in the area that are actors, got a little bit of work on The Veep, and also with House of Cards was another one where people were spending a lot of time in cattle calls and stuff like that, being extras in background work, and getting an opportunity to try to get their foot in the door down there. You had also told me, and this is another movie that, a Baltimore-based movie, Sollers Point. I actually lived on Sollers Point Road down in Dundalk for a couple of years, or near about a year. And so tell me about that movie, the part that you did and everything.
Well, that was an independent film. I actually I went into Baltimore to audition for it. It was somewhere, one of the universities was... they were using the space. I can't remember which one. And we were just, we were in a bar, for, you know, in, it was on Hartford Road.
Oh, sure. Hartford Road. Yeah.
Somewhere north of Northern Parkway, but south of the Beltway. I'm not exactly sure, but you know,
there's
anyone
who
knows Baltimore will know.
Was it one of the Irish ones? Was it the Emerald or the Shamrock or one of those?
Yeah, it definitely was one of those.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely some kind of Irish thing going on. And they were actually, they actually had, so they were setting up shots in the bar. But my scene was in the back where people went out to smoke.
Oh, and, okay, right.
Yeah, and I'm just my character is a lush, and he mostly just begs for drinks from people, you know. but he tries to tell jokes to them, you know, to make them feel better about, you know, supporting an alcoholic or whatever. Yep. Mm-hmm. So I'm telling the main character, the movie is about a main character who gets paroled. And he's reacclimating into life, but you know, there's a little bit of an element that he still gets involved with, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right.
Unfortunately, I haven't seen the entire film because it was at a lot of festivals around the country, but nothing close enough that I could get to.
Okay.
I don't know if they ever released it on DVD or. Or is it Amazon or anything? But at any rate, yeah. So he's at this bar. I think he's trying to hook up with somebody who's dealing something, but I'm not sure exactly what. But my job is to try to get a drink from him, and so I'm telling him these jokes, and this other, you know, this other guy has no sense of humor, and he walks off, and then it's just me and the main character, and I'm telling this joke about it's kind of inappropriate. So, and in the meantime, while I'm doing that, I'm trying to pretend to smoke a cigarette. I don't actually smoke.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't really look like I'm really smoking when I'm holding the cigarette. I never hold it. I can never hold a cigarette properly.
Right.
You know,
right.
To look like I'm doing, but somehow I managed to get a couple of shots where I actually looked like I was smoking cigarette, like I knew what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I tell him the joke, and then he's like, come on. And then we go inside, and presumably he buys me a drink. It was fun to do a film set in Baltimore, actually in Baltimore, both set and filmed in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. We don't get to do that often. It's usually one or the other.
Right, right.
and it was, you know, it ended up doing pretty well in the festivals. It was a good time.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned too another project that you had worked on called The Brothers Nobody.
The guy who developed The Brothers Nobody, which was a web series, it ended up only doing a couple of episodes. But what sparked his attention, he decided to retool the character that he played in that, and he ended up writing The Thespian. And that ended up, just got done shooting in its second season, as a web series. And it, you know, it's a lot of fun. And then I actually had a recurring role, one scene in each season.
Oh, okay.
As a jogger who, who dispenses life advice.
Oh, okay.
To strangers. And, so the first time we meet, I explained my situation about how I do this as a kind of a therapy for myself. And so I give him some really bad advice because that's all of my advice is really bad. And I run off, I jog off. And then in the second season, which we shot, but we haven't really seen yet because they're still in post-production. It's kind of slowed down with post-production because nobody can work physically in the same place right now.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they have to do their meetings. Fortunately, they got all the filming done. Mm-hmm. But now they have to do their telework meetings and whatnot.
Sure.
But hopefully we'll be able to see that soon. So in the second one, I end up knocking him over, and then we meet, and I don't want to give him advice because he's not really a stranger, because that's one of my rules.
Right. Right.
But then he manages to wheedle, convince me that maybe I should give him advice, and then I give him more bad advice. Most of the advice I give involves homicide. Oddly enough, it's kind of weird, but you just go with it. And, right. And then I go off and do my thing. But, it was awesome that he asked me to come back and be this character. And the weird thing is about this character is his character, the main character, is the only one who ever sees him. So we don't know. He could be not real.
Sure, right.
Or he could be real. We don't know. But maybe we'll find out in season 3.
Right. And where can we see this?
Season 1 is on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can find it on Amazon Prime, I believe.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's also on iTunes, but yeah, if you have Amazon Prime, you should be able to find it.
Okay, sure.
But you can go to if you Google The Thespian, it should show you either a John Lovett YouTube sketch or this website.
Okay.
For the web series.
Okay. Great. So what else have you been up to lately? And you had mentioned a couple of things that you've done lately that are pretty good. Are there things that you're allowed to or not allowed to say?
Well, I am allowed to say that the name of the show I was in, I just can't really talk about what was going on in the scene. That's the only thing I really can't say. Okay. But there is this Netflix show called The Politician, and season 1 is already out, and I highly recommend anybody watch this because it is really good. It's smart. It's kind of like one of those dark, uncomfortable comedies.
Okay.
And if you like those, you really will like this because it is just so smart and clean.
Okay.
And so they were shooting season 2, and January was when I was shooting. I don't know if they got it all done before everyone had to shut down or not. They might have a few episodes left to shoot, but I was blessed because I got to work with Bette Midler,
wow,
and Judith Light, who is the mom from Who's the Boss?
Right. She was on SVU.
She was on SVU.
She played a judge or one of the attorney generals or something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched a lot of Law and Order, so I that's not my first go-to when I try to explain who she is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't know names.
Sure.
Me included. Yeah. But I was so Oh my God, when I realized who I would be doing my scene with, I just freaked out.
Oh
And
man.
it was so awesome. They were two of the nicest people, and of course they were complete professionals and supremely talented, of course. I knew that was going to happen, but I didn't expect, but they were so nice that they would actually talk to me sometimes, when they were, between takes and whatnot. So yeah, it was a lot of good times. But yeah, they were actually in the last episode of the first season, so it's not a surprise that they're in second season, because that was kind of setting up second season.
Oh, great, great.
So I'm not giving any secrets away, really.
Right,
It's
nothing
all
you're
that's
going.
if you read any, like Variety or probably any, like Hollywood trade publication, you probably would have already known about their involvement and the fact that they're actually doing a season two of it.
Oh, great, great. That's excellent. That sounds like it's a, to show people are going to
Oh,
see and everything. And
I was so blessed. And then of course everything in New York shuts down, which is good because we need to, flatten the curve and save lives.
yep.
I do not but it also means that, there won't be any television or film work in New York until, who knows.
But I have a feeling once it starts again, it's really going to start again,
Yeah, it's gonna they're really jumping. There are a lot of shows that were in production, I mean for the season, like most of the network shows, they usually don't finish their production until late March.
Right, right.
And so I know I they haven't really said anything, but I'm pretty sure that some of these shows that people are watching aren't going to have season finales for a while. So that'll be disappointing for people. So if you're watching any major network TV show, be prepared. You might not see a season finale for a couple of months.
Exactly. Yeah, it might end up being in the summertime instead of they may you may end up having to bide your time watching reruns for a little bit
Yeah,
until
it depends on the show and depends on where they were in their production schedule when everything got shut down.
Exactly. So one question I like to ask a lot of my guests here, and I have bands on, I have actors, I have comedians, I have all kinds of all kinds of different performers and artists and things like that. But one thing I like to ask is to the actors, have you ever had I like to hear a story that you may have had about a completely horrific audition where you completely blew it. Or maybe somebody was auditioning for you where you were a director or something, and it was like, audition horror stories.
Well, we've all had bad auditions.
Oh yeah, and you don't have to mention names. You don't have to,
Oh
or it
yeah.
could be something too that may have happened while you were performing. You were performing and somebody went up on their lines or something absolutely crazy happened on stage.
If you want to include performances, yeah, there was a production of Plaza Suite. I'm sorry, it's a three act play where often the same two actor and actresses play a different couple in each of the three acts, and they're but the thing is they're all in the same room in Plaza Suite. And well, we had a rehearsal schedule and everything. In the opening night comes and we do act one. Fantastic. It was perfect. And of course, I think maybe I got a little cocky. I don't know. Somebody else did. But act two, had some sticking points for us in that, because when it's mostly just two people talking, it can get to the point where you're like, where am I sometimes? You know, because it's a lot of, you know, you have almost half the lines in the thing, and she has almost half the lines in the thing. You know, it's going to look, you know, it's going to feel a lot very similar in a lot of places. You try to break it up with blocking and stuff like that. But, yeah, so they, you know, we're going along in Act Two, and this is remember, this is opening night. This is community theater, so there weren't, you know, it wasn't a packed house, but you know, they did pay money. So we're going along, and for some reason, I think she just said a line that was just slightly different from how it was on the page. And you know, if I had been in another state of mind, I probably would have been fine, and I would have just kept going. But somehow that made me skip a page and a half.
Oh my God.
Yes, a page and a half. And totally my fault. And I was just like, and she just looks at me like she's watching a horror movie, because she's like, what is happening? Right, you know, right. And I'm like, what is happening? You know, I'm like, I realize something's wrong, but you know, so it just kind of, it kind of breaks down into, you know, but we end up getting it back on track. She's ridiculously smart, and she pulls back information that was in that page and a half back into the dialogue so that the audience has it before they need it, you know? So, you know, yeah, it was horrible. And, you know, it was awful, but we ended up getting through it. And then Act Three was kind of like, it wasn't perfect, but it wasn't anywhere near the way Act Two was. So
it was it's, you know, some of those times where you realize that you did something like that, and then you have to kind of ad lib and improvise your way to get the train back on the tracks there. And that also does buy you some time to think about,
when you skip a page and a half, there's very there's very little your partner can do to steer it back. And you'd be amazed how awesomely perfectly we did Act Two the second night. We ran those lines over so many times. But so you know, and the rest of the run was awesome.
Well, that's good to hear. I had one of the disastrous things that happened on stage with me once was when I first started getting into theater. You know, I'd always been a musician up until about 10 years ago, and I was I'd done a production of Jesus Christ Superstar, and I played mostly an apostle, but I was also a Roman, and it was to the point where we were doing the 39 lashes. I went over, I lifted up Jesus, I put him up what's the thing called that you tie the person?
Pillory.
Yeah.
I don't know why I know that, but it's pillory.
Right. So we had him up on there, and I started whipping, you know, and for some reason, the whole thing just fell over.
Oh, no.
And I was only on lash 18, so he's laying on the floor, and I had to keep beating him up for another 21 lashes. No. And so I was just like, oh my God. So I was like, just keep going with it. And then he's laying there on the floor, and I go back over to my position, and then, you know, Pontius Pilate comes over and starts singing to him and, you know, doing his part. And I happen to look over, and he's laying on the floor. He's down on the floor, and the bottom of his sandal said, "Hush, puppies." And you could see. The bottom of his sandal said, "Hush, puppies."
Oh, I love it.
and, And I just couldn't, I just, you know, I was sitting there the whole time. I was about ready to just start laughing, you know, just. And then finally, you know, we had to go back over and get him and everything. And then when I got back, and this was another place where we were doing theater in the round as well.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and
I've only done that once, and I don't want to do it ever again.
I think that's odd, too, because the majority of the theater that I've done is theater in the round. I've very rarely done anything, yeah, where it's just on a stage at Christenium.
It's so hard making sure everyone hears you. But at any rate, back to your story.
Right. So, you know, finally we got him off stage and I stopped laughing because, you know, the rest of the thing is very solemn and everything. And you can't have somebody up there smirking like.
Right.
So I had to get that out of my head real quick. And and if you know anything about me, I'm probably one of the most easily amused, juvenile sense of humor people that laughs at just about anything. And getting me to stop laughing once I really start cracking up is a chore. And I was able to keep it together for this one, though. But I became really good friends with Jesus after that, too. He was a good one of my good friends and everything here. So, well, Greg, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here during this quarantine. And,
it's great that you helped save my sanity just a little bit by giving me someone to talk to.
Absolutely. So you're all the way, you live all the way out near Cumberland. What's the name of the town you live in?
It's LaVale.
Oh, LaVale, okay.
Which is just outside of Cumberland.
Sure, just past it, right?
Just past it if you're coming from the east, yes.
Right, and that's the thing, too. You want to talk about dedication. How long does it take you to get to New York for an audition or for work?
Okay, usually when I have an audition, I drive to Baltimore to catch either a mega bus or the Chinatown bus. Mm-hmm. And that takes about 2 hours, two and a half, depending on traffic. Uh-huh. And then I hop on the bus and it takes about 3 hours to get to New York.
That's it? It's not longer than that?
They drive like maniacs.
Oh, do they?
Bus drivers. Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, ridiculous. It's ridiculous because, you know, a cop is not going to pull a bus with, you know, 80 passengers in it over to give them a ticket.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So they just speed as fast as they possibly can.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and they only slow down if there's traffic, you know.
Oh, okay, I see.
And so it takes them 3:15, to get from Baltimore into Manhattan.
Right. Yeah, I was, I remember we ran into each other up there not too long ago, too. That was neat. You know, we got a chance to sit down and have lunch together and everything. It was really nice, you know.
That was a wardrobe. I have my wardrobe fitting for the politician that day, and you had an audition for a commercial, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was something. I forget what it was. I go to so many auditions and everything. I forget which one's which. But
well, that's good. We should all be so lucky if we can forget what we were doing because we had so many.
Right. Well, that's auditions, not bookings, but unfortunately. Well, but, you know.
Yeah, but an audition is a win. For people who do not know the industry, they for a particular a typical role in a television show or a film, they will probably have 1,200 to 2,000 names.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
About 20 of them get brought in for an audition.
Yep, it is,
and then maybe about three get called for the callback, and then one gets booked.
Right.
So 20 out of 1,200 is a ridiculous win. If you only have the audition and it goes no further.
Right. And the thing is too, it's like a lot of times when they say no, it's no for now. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Because the casting office knows you now, and they know what you can do, and they're going to be looking for stuff that you're right for.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And the reason you don't get booked often is not because most of the time it's not because you sucked. It's because you were too tall, or you were not. You know, all sorts of reasons that are beyond your control.
Exactly. And usually the ones that are, and that's true too. That's true too. Cause you got to think about, filming with this person, as well, I mean, the part that I got in Gotham, I mean, I was brought in as, the Penguin's bodyguard, and I tower over him. I think I was over a foot taller than him.
I'm surprised it was only a foot.
Yeah,
because I don't know how tall he is actually.
I'm 6'6". And I think he was 5'6".
Oh, okay, okay.
So, as a matter of fact, when I was standing there with that tray when we were out in the hallway, the tray actually had real food on it, which I was surprised.
Not some lacquered over.
No, it wasn't. They weren't rubber grapes or anything like that. They were real grapes. It was grapes. And a really strong smelling cheese and open tins of sardines. So I'm standing there and I'm holding, the awkward, goofy character I was. I'm standing there. I was like kind of holding it up about chest high or a little bit lower than that.
Yeah.
And so I was standing behind him and then he turned around and he was like nose level with that stuff. And he goes, "Man." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, he goes, "Do you eat this stuff?" And I said, "I have. It's not every day." I said, "But usually about once or twice a year, I'll eat a can of sardines for the hell of it, And he goes, "Jesus, how do you eat that?" And I said, "Well, it's not like it's date food or anything like that. It's just, you get a hunkering for some sardines once in a while. What do you want from me, So
I guess.
But
I ate a pickle at Gotham, so I really can't judge.
Right. I know. So, that's how it was, but I was like a good foot taller than him. And then, another part I auditioned for on that show was, also in that episode was a scene where, Bruce Wayne and Alfred go into a tunnel and there's some sort of a humanoid down there that was mutilating and, tearing people up and everything. And, so the audition, when I went to audition for that, I had two parts, no lines for either one. For one, I had to make growling and snarling noises. And for the other one, I had to make dumb faces. So that was my first step. That was my first trip to the big dance was, by making dumb faces or snarling noises. And, yeah, and then the other big job that I've booked was the J.G. Wentworth commercial. I had no lines for that either. I just had to lip sync to opera.
And, yeah, because they use the same soundtrack that they recorded
20 years ago
the first time. Yeah,
yeah. Actually, you know what? There are two different ones because I've noticed this because I'm home a lot during the day. Because I work from my day job, I work from the house a lot, and I watch TV and that commercial and different J.G. Wentworth commercials come on. The way the opera goes, it's like sometimes the opening line, they have the chorus, and then sometimes the opening line is sung with a male voice. Some of them, it's the opening one is sung with a female voice, and then it's like back and forth, male, female, male,
gotcha.
Female. And so there are a couple of different recordings of that, but the thing that's weird about this, and it's just been lately, the commercial's been airing for over a year. I've been getting recognized. I was at a bull roast a couple of weeks ago and I'm sitting there, I'm just eating some beef and some oysters and everything. And these guys come over to me and they go, "Excuse me, are you the Viking in that commercial?" And I said, yeah, I am. And then, we were at our church, for Lent, they have fish fries on Friday nights, And then Teresa, my wife, was sitting at a table with a lady. My wife is active in the church, and they were at a table where they're doing something. And she was sitting with a lady, and the lady goes, "Is your husband that Viking from that J.G. Wentworth commercial?" And I said, and she's like, "Yeah, And so it's strange,
That's awesome.
Yeah, so... I ended up taking a picture with those guys at the bull roast and everything. And I'm like, now what we need to do is I need to convince them to make that Viking a recurring character like Flo or like the Geico Gecko or the caveman or whatever. That's what we need to do. That's what we need to do. I need to find a way to do that.
You need to, well, I guess we're going to have to start some kind of PR campaign.
Right, right.
Some crowdsourced PR campaign. Anybody who can hear this, you go to J.G. Wentworth's website and tell him how much you love the Viking in the commercial, in the opera commercial on the bus.
Yep.
And you want to see him again in other films. Yep. There. So that'll help.
That'll exactly help. And tell them that the Viking is a very, very, very nice guy.
Yes. And good to work with.
Yes, yes. See, and I have references too. I have the pickle eater, the barfly pickle eater from Gotham. I have Mr. McDaniel from eighth grade as a reference. You know.
Yeah.
I've got.
And the guy who made the puppets for Stu Great Kerr. Space Coaster is also a good character reference.
Exactly.
For
yes, and his episode
tie
was
back
just
to last week.
Yeah. Yeah. His episode was just released today, as a matter of fact.
That's awesome.
On Foul Players Radio. So great.
I saw that.
So Greg, thank you for being with us here. Great. It's great to see you again. You know, I'm hoping we'll get the train up and running soon so we can work together. And
that'd be awesome.
And great. Well, thank you all for listening, folks. And stay safe during quarantine season here.
Yeah, and stay safe. Wash your hands and keep 6 foot away from people that you're not living with.
Stay happy and healthy, and we'll see you all soon. Thank you all very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.